Hey friends, we appreciate you, the listener, and I hope you appreciate our sponsors because they make Hansel Minutes possible. Today's first sponsor is Melissa. Are you looking to build real-time contact data validation and enrichment into your applications? Try Melissa's developer portal. You'll gain easy access to flexible APIs for global address verification, phone, IP address, email, and property and business data. Sample code and get post methods plus technical documentation are all included. Quick online payment makes rapid application development easy. Please visit melissa.com/developer or call 1-800-MELISSA. Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I've got Arlen Hamilton, founder of Backstage Capital. You were on the show 2 years ago, and I think I was less than professional.
You were so professional, but I was gonna say, well, we should say that Christy's here. Christy Pitts.
Hello. Hi.
Woo. Christy Pitts is my investment partner at Backstage Capital, and she's with us today in Portland. I should say that I wasn't talking smack. I was gonna say to Christy, so we recorded like 2 years ago. I had just met Scott just probably a couple of days prior to that at an event, right? And he came and he recorded at the hotel. And he came in. He didn't have a couple of pieces of equipment that he needed. But it was fine, you know. But it was – I was just like, huh, I wonder – you know, because I hadn't done many podcasts at that point and, you know, hadn't met a lot of people in tech. So I was just like, what's going on here? And it was fine. It was fine. And I was in a rush. Whatever. As soon as he pushes record, though, it's like you're transported into another world. You're so professional. Like, you're so good. It's almost like it's the second skin that you put on or something. It's really good. It reminds me a lot of musicians who just go on stage and they're on, or actors who are just like shooting the breeze, and then they're like action, and then boom, they're there, you know? So yeah, I thought it was really interesting.
Well, that's very kind. I appreciate the compliment. And if I may then, thinking about how you were at the time, you were, if I may say, somewhat shy. You were a little nervous, and you said that you didn't do a lot of public speaking.
True. All of that.
But you now have a podcast of your own,
uh-huh.
And you are the subject of another podcast.
That's right.
So do you consciously take things that you are either uncomfortable with or you're not, like, not your specialty, and then just keep doing them until you become an expert at them?
It depends on my interest level. So I don't necessarily do that for everything, but if I am really interested and really have it in my head that I need to do something to be better,
mm-hmm.
or...
Sorry.
It's okay.
Hang on. There might be an edit point there. Did you trick it off airplane mode?
Yeah.
Is it still? Yeah.
It might be me because I'm on an airport.
No.
Airport.
We have to be on air.
I can do it.
When you took it off,
I can do
about
it.
30 seconds ago, it started again. I apologize.
Okay.
No worries.
I'll do it too.
I realize that that's
we'll all get in the plane.
Asking you for you to be disconnected for.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot that goes on. In our phone, Scott. I don't know why you're...
Actually, you know, what I thought would be an edit point, I think we'll just keep it in there because we're...
Yeah.
In this case, sometimes when you're phone and you're doing a podcast, you can hear the email whoosh in.
Whooshing. And I can hear it like a ghost anyway, even when I'm not really hearing it. I hear emails going ding or like buzzing in my pocket, even when there's nothing there. So.
What has changed in the last 2 years? Is it an order of magnitude more happening?
When it comes to me not being shy and being able to speak, you're right. I'm flashing back to it, and it was a very different situation.
Yeah.
About a year ago exactly, I did like my first public speaking thing in tech.
Mm.
And it was because 2 months prior, I made a promise to myself that I would no longer miss out on opportunities because of my issue with stage fright.
Mm.
And so I had really bad stage fright, like half the population does.
Right.
And it was just, to me, it was like, no, I'm just not going to do it. I don't do anything I don't want to do. I can do stuff online. I don't have to go in front of people. And then I had two things happen where I missed out. One was I missed getting an award that my mom was attending, and I couldn't take the award because I couldn't do the silly to hear it now, but I couldn't do the acceptance speech, and they needed you to be able to do that in order to be honored at this thing. And I just told them, I just said no. And I realized as I was watching someone else get the award how not cool that was of me. And then the second thing was I missed out on an opportunity to possibly speak with one of my heroes, Richard Branson, because he was speaking at Forbes 30 Under 30 the same year that I was asked to speak and at the same stage right after me. So I had said no to that because I just couldn't. It was at Faneuil Hall, which was at the time like saying go to the White House and speak, you know, on the lawn, basically. And so I said no, and I watched from the seats and watched him speak and watched him go back to the green room where I would have been sitting and possibly meeting him. So in January 2017, I said I'm going to say yes to three different speaking engagements this year, that year. And even if it sucks, even if it's horrible, I would have tried. So then Anea Williams, who you know from from Black and Brown Founders and from ZebraCon, and she's also a founder in our portfolio, she asked me to do something in March of 2017. I reluctantly said yes because I had already made that promise to myself. She made it very comfortable. I was terrified. There were probably 60 people in the room tops, still terrified. And then something happened when she asked me the first question. Like I was terrified. I was off on the side, just like shaking. And Christy knows she was there. Like I was like, it was.
Can confirm.
It was like really, it was, my heart was pounding and I was like, why, how did I get here? And actually someone offered to like go get me alcohol because at the time, I used to drink and quite a bit. And they were like, can I get you something? They went and got me something to drink, but I didn't drink it. And so I got there, got on to, you know, got in the seat with the microphone. It was being live streamed as well. And something about when that first question, when she asked me that first question and I looked out at the audience and I was just like, there's people just like smiling at me and like I felt like it was so much more important that I said and I shared than me being about myself and how scared I was.
Yeah.
It felt like someone was going to get something from it. And then that started being proven over and over again when people would come up to me and say, hey, I saw you speak at this thing and like that inspired me to do this other thing or something like that. And when I realized that it wasn't important that I sounded super smart or if I knew everything, it wasn't important that I didn't know everything.
Right.
It was more important that I showed up and that I shared and then I gave of myself. And then when it became about other people, that's really easy to convince me to get over something.
When I sometimes I'll come into contact with young people that are on stage or I'm coming off stage and they're about to come on after me or whatever. And I was talking with a young woman who was an intern at Microsoft and I didn't realize that after me, she was going to be giving her first talk ever. And I could tell she was vibrating with that. Like, what have I done?
Yes.
Right. What have I signed up for? And I was trying to figure out like, what am I supposed, I was expected to like, kind of like say something inspirational or like just, and I just said, everybody here wants you to succeed. This audience is not against you. They want you to kick butt and they're going to cheer when you do. And I don't know if that helped or not, but she did kick butt. So that's my go-to thing to like remind them that the audience loves you. That's they came to see you.
So and I think that's definitely helpful. And I know for me at that point, everything that people said to me just sounded scary. So what I try to say to people is like, yeah, you could suck, you know, but what will happen if you do? You know, what's the worst that could happen if you do?
It's what's the worst that could happen is a big statement that can get people twisted off into their own minds.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because really bad stuff could potentially happen.
Yeah. I think it comes down to, you know, it's a lot, like a lot of things, like stopping a vice or something. It's like it has to come from within. It has to be your time. It has to come from you. You can get advice from everybody. You can hear things and maybe those things will echo in your mind. But when it comes down to it, overcoming a fear like this and like so many other types of fears, it really just comes down to you have that moment, I think, right? I mean, I've had that a few times.
I read an article that was talking about why people have their vices and why they fail to stop smoking or why they fall off their diet. Like I'm on like another diet right now and my wife is like, you know, you always do this for a couple of months. I log every calorie and then I stop, right? And I read this article that said we have wells of willpower and that well of willpower can be depleted. I don't remember figuring out how to fill it up, though. And I'm hearing
Diet Coke is, I hear it's I'm really...
like, yeah, I could mainline Diet Coke.
Wow. Get along.
Yes, with lime. what I want to understand, though, is that in all the things you're describing, whether it be starting, you know, bootstrapping your capital fund, whether it be getting over public speaking concerns, you must have this infinite well of willpower. And how do you – where does this well come from? Because you're describing all these things that require – reserves of willpower.
You know, this image I just got was that it's not a – if it's a well, then, you know, some of it has to go somewhere. And it's almost like it's just – I mean, you want my honest answer?
I've asked all.
I weigh 240 pounds. Mm. So, yes, I have willpower about a lot of things, but it's transferred. So I used to have I used to drink really heavily and was not able to stop until about 10 months ago. Mm-hmm. And that was nothing I could control until I could. And I would say definitely I have willpower because I don't think I could have gotten here at this point in my career and what we were doing at Backstage without willpower and a lot of other things. But I think everybody has there's some vice. And I, you know, my vice is chocolate, Diet Coke, breads and cheeses.
See, we can very much vibe over the cheese and Diet Coke crowd because there's people at work that I will see put down 2-3 pots of coffee before lunch.
Yeah.
Nobody says boo.
Right.
But I drink 2 Diet Cokes. Man, you need to take a break.
Yeah.
You have a problem.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think we do. I think we have a problem.
Of all the problems I could have, like aspartame is low on the list.
Yeah.
Like I'm diabetic.
Yeah.
What else can I drink?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. The air in my mouth tastes better than water. So if I can't have Diet Coke, like cut me some slack. Let me drink a Diet Coke. Can I live?
Wow.
She's like, this podcast has taken a turn.
Yeah, it's taken several turns. Yes.
Don't even get me started on cheese.
I'm a string cheese. Like I.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I need to stop this podcast.
Yes.
Do you bite the string cheese or do you pull on the sides?
Okay. I'm a lady.
Okay,
Scott.
Good. You're not a
so,
savage.
So, of course, I peel it. That's what it's there for.
I was
going to
make sure. Yeah.
That's why it's created this way.
Amongst the cheese community of which you and I are members,
yes.
This is the pineapple on pizza question. You know, do you just bite the string cheese like savage or do you peel it
off? Who are these people that do that? Do you do that, Christy?
It's the people who bite into the Kit Kat.
I must confess, I have
you bite
the string cheese. But I prefer to peel. However, I will bite for efficiency.
And not enough diligence, apparently, on this one. How do you do that? How do you bite into a string cheese? I know we have so little time.
Do you completely disrespect the Kit Kat? You just go sideways?
Oh, the Kit Kat. Oh, I have methodology on the Kit Kat. Okay, so the Kit Kat, I like to – you know how it's like give me a break? I'm going to take a break of the Kit Kat bar. What's the phrase?
Give me a break?
Yes, that. Yeah. Okay, like I really do need a break to eat a Kit Kat because it takes me about 45 minutes.
Wow.
Because I want to eat all the chocolate off.
Oh.
And then the wafers one by one.
I don't think that's how the Kit Kat wants to be eaten.
You see how we're judging her. We don't want to be judged, but we're judging her.
There is implicit judgment there.
Meanwhile, the string cheese down the hatch.
I think next time you go to buy string cheese, you leave it there for people who will respect it.
Yes. You don't
deserve. Okay, you get the other cheese that you can chew on.
Fair enough.
Right. You can have the little ones, the little Baby Bell weirdo, like the cow cheese. You can have those. And you can eat the outside too if you want to.
The what?
Just eat the wax. It's fine.
The judgment in this room over what we eat.
Sorry. Okay, so
palpable.
This is – so there are vices, and the well of willpower is not limitless, but you focus on the things that matter to you, and you drink a Diet Coke without guilt.
I think it's the same thing that makes – you know, it's kind of cliche, but I am sort of – I'm full on whether that's good or bad. So if I'm interested in something, I can become full on, and that gets me – starting a venture capital fund from nothing. And it also gets me like, I'm going to eat that pizza, that whole one.
And own it. And
Yeah. And so it's good and it's bad. Mm-hmm. It's that double-sided sword, as it were.
But that skill, though, has made this fund even more successful. So 2 years later, since I last talked to you, how many investments have you all made?
We're officially at 80.
Seriously?
Of 100. And
what does 100 mean?
Well, so when I first set out, I set this goal for myself of getting to 100 companies by 2020 for not as a race or anything, but sort of like I felt like that is what was needed to make the most impact and the most mm-hmm. noise. I thought that if I invested in 5 or 6 companies, that would be really cool because I didn't have any money, so that would be something.
Right.
But I thought, you know, I want to do something that people think is impossible because they're saying that there are not enough companies even started by women or people of color or LGBT founders. So mm-hmm. I had have very high standards for what we invest in, and I was seeing so many companies. And since then, you know, we see like 1,200 this year probably.
Really?
And it was like 1,000 the last couple of years.
Hey folks, Intel is a sponsor this week, and I welcome them because they're bringing some high-performance developer tools for all of us. Check out Intel's Parallel Studio XE. I've talked about parallelism before on the show and the importance of using the complete instruction set, unlocking the power of the processor that your code is running on. Now, you all might be writing C or C++, Python, or even Fortran, but is your code building in such a way and written in such a way that it uses the latest techniques for vectorization, multi-threading, multi-node parallelization, or memory optimization? Intel Parallel Studio XE has a lot of new stuff for 2018 across all these languages. Get a free download at bit.ly/ParallelStudioXE, or certainly go and Google or Google with Bing for Intel Parallel Studio XE, and get started boosting your app's performance with smart parallel code with a lot less effort. Check them out, bit.ly/ParallelStudioXE. Comparing now to when we spoke in 2016, did you feel that like kind of you were niche before and now everyone knows you? Because like while we were walking from the first floor to the second floor of this building, you got pitched like twice.
Yeah, and that's low. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I was part of it because I wanted someone to meet you. But it was just like everyone is giving you the equivalent of like my mixtape is fire all the way up. You know what I mean?
Scott, you're tripping me out.
But it's true, though, isn't it? Right? Isn't that happening?
Oh, it happens all day long. I mean,
pitched on the bus to the airport.
I get pitched all the time, and it's only going to get.
Well, when you have 100, when you have 100.
Yeah, and you know, so yeah, I get pitched a lot. I the thing that I set out to do that I didn't know if I would be able to, but I knew that I wanted to try. That thing is happening, which is I said, what if there was someone that every black founder in the country, if they were starting a company, they would want to have on their cap table. What if there was someone? And I can't say that 100% do. I'm not going to go that far. But they at least, you know, 7 out of those 10 are going to know backstage or know of us.
Right.
And maybe 5 out of 10 want us on their cap table, if not more.
What does that mean, cap table?
Cap table is it's just a list of investors in your company.
Okay. And let me ask you some of the questions that some of the people who will be listening to this show will be thinking. Why do black and brown founders need an advocate or a fund of their own? Why aren't they just pitching the regular, quote unquote, regular way?
Mm-hmm. They are. They are pitching the quote unquote, regular way.
Okay.
There's a lot of bias and there are a lot of roadblocks for black and brown founders that are just inherently there. And there, you know, I said that 2 years ago, and I can tell you with
You know even more now.
I know so much more.
You've been both on the inside and the outside.
Yeah, and the we talk about data collection. I mean, we have it. We see it in droves. And there's so much now. There's so much to that question now because it's more than it was when I started.
A lot's happened in 2 years.
A lot has happened in the world, and the things that I couldn't have imagined with backstage have happened. Where in some cases it's just about, like, I recently had someone contact me who was in a very competitive round.
Okay.
Oversubscribed. You couldn't get into the round, but they wanted backstage just because they didn't have any women of color on their cap table, on their list of investors.
So translate some of that into layman's language.
Oh, okay, that's
right.
So
oversubscribed, meaning that everyone wanted to invest in them?
Yeah, so that's another thing that you do very well, Scott. You're your own person. Okay, I know.
I just want to advocate for the listener.
You are. You're so good at that. See, I'm learning because I have my own podcast, so I'm learning more and more from you.
Okay, so this people, they were oversubscribed.
So this company, when the example I just gave, so this company had already raised the amount of money that they wanted to raise, that they set out to, in a very quick amount of time, which is not normal. And then on top of that, they had a waiting list of investors saying, can we please invest because you're such a cool company and such a good company. We want in. And they – so you can't walk up to them and say, hey, can we talk?
So I would have like – I would have $1 million and I would want to give it to them. They don't even want it.
Zero.
They have enough
zero
people.
Chance. I've even
– I can't give them money.
Absolutely.
Wow.
So that same company – this is just an example.
Yeah.
You know, they reached out to me and said, we'd like you to get in before we close this round officially, legally.
Interesting. So they went for you and said, we want your money because we want you on our list of people we can call investors. We can say Backstage appreciates us.
Yeah, and gets us. And on their list of – I mean, these people – you know, the people on their waiting list and the people that had invested are top-tier funds who just – they're getting – no, it's almost like – think about if you walk up to a club and they say, are you on the list? And if you're not on the list, you can wait in line. There's a chance you might be able to get in. But what they said to Backstage was, hey, VIP – you're already in. Come on back.
So you cut the line, open the velvet rope, and then you're in the club.
Yeah. Okay. I got a little bit – I felt privilege. It was a little taste of privilege that I hadn't had.
So let's talk about that a little bit. We've talked before about how I do like what my friend Anwan Simmons invented, this idea of lending privilege.
Yeah.
I try to lift people up, give them a little bump, the Hanselman bump on the way up. I talk to people – I try to talk to people. Don't tease me now. I try to talk to people on the come up and give them some visibility, right?
Yeah. So very, very much so.
So originally, you know, some number of years ago, and you can tell me how many years ago, you were lacking in a number of privileges, not the least of which being a roof over your head.
Yeah.
And now you're finding yourself both in some ways underprivileged, but in some ways extremely privileged.
Yeah.
You could call venture people on the phone. You probably can text people at Google Ventures right now.
Yes.
That is a privilege I do not have.
Yes.
How does that feel when you have one foot in a place of privilege and one foot in not a place of privilege?
It's funny. It's a humorous ride because within moments, I can experience both. So I can feel –
maybe boarding a plane.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I board planes. I probably fly 4 or 5 times a week now. Mm-hmm. So I board planes a lot. I'm in first class a lot. So I have that experience of – can I see your ticket? Are you supposed to be here? A lot. And I'm like, you know.
While you're on the way to close a round.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the irony of that.
Exactly. Like I would have just said – or I would have just, you know, spent a day just working my ass off and working with hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, back and forth in some way or another. And then I get on the plane to go to the next place to maybe do a speaking engagement or meet with the founder. And I'll have that moment of, you know, you're the help. Mm. You know, and that happens every day. It happened within 24 hours. I mean, like of now, like it happens every single day, those microaggressions. But on the other side of it, the way that I describe it is that I've been siphoning privilege for the past 3 years. And what I do is I see, like I watch men and I watch white people and I see what they do with their privilege and I siphon it like a – I don't know. There's probably some sort of character.
This is interesting. That's juxtaposing lending privilege and siphoning privilege.
Oh, I siphon it because sometimes people don't – there's not a lot of people like you who want to lend it. So I appreciate the lend, but with the ones who are not lending, boom, while they're looking over, I have the little – what do you call it when you're taking people's gas at their car? Do you know what I'm talking about, Christy? Christy Pitts?
Not that I've done that once or twice as a young person.
Yes. Christy Pitts, have you ever siphoned gas?
I have not siphoned gas,
really
but it is
bad.
Like you use a big straw-like thing.
Oh my
goodness! You take a bucket, and when they're not looking, you get up behind their car.
Christy, say something about blockchain, so we know something.
Just gonna say blockchain.
Blonde and nerdy all the time, same time.
Yes. When you siphon it, though, you have to suck in on the big on the tube. And
the
you
tube.
Have to
the tube.
Yes. That's what I meant.
But you have to
it's
also
a series
make sure
of tubes.
If they're in the car at the time, though, you have to be aware of their line of sight. So that they don't look out the rearview mirror and see you siphon gas.
You have siphoned gas from a car that had a driver in it.
But the trick is, though, if you
that,
get
an, that was a yes, that was an affirmative.
I neither confirm nor deny. But if you can get some of the older cars,
damn.
Then the gas tank is on the back in the old cars, and you unscrew it on the back of the trunk, right? And you don't have to come up on the side because the driver's side is dangerous. You can't siphon gas out the driver's side.
You see?
If one were to theoretically siphon gas.
I don't. Oh, I'm not. So.
So you siphon privilege.
I do. I siphon it. I mean, I observe it. I do a lot with privilege. I play with privilege. I observe it. I don't necessarily respect it. I don't have any sort of – I don't look at it in awe mm-hmm. in any way, including my own. So I don't have much reverence for privilege, which means that it's really easy for me to also share mine.
That was the next thing I was going to ask. I tweeted something a couple of weeks ago that got like 1,000 tweets or whatever retweets. Yeah. And it was the most important thing that you should do once you've made it up over the ledge is to send a ladder back down.
Yeah.
And a lot of people really appreciated that tweet. And then a bunch of other people were like, well, is it a rope ladder? What kind of a ladder is it? I don't think you just kick the ladder down and then they why can't they lift
Twitter, Twitter, the only place where
this
you can give away money.
Free. Yes.
Give away money and someone still has a problem and tells you how you're doing it wrong, which I experienced this year.
Do you really?
I've experienced that this year when I started a nonprofit. And I got and Alyssa Milano retweeted about it.
Talk about that nonprofit because that was a genius idea. That was micro loans, right? Micro grants.
Well, it's not loans, grants. It's a total nonprofit. So I, Backstage Capital is for profit, sharky. I get to play in that world every day. Mm-hmm. But it kind of just started. My dad passed away a couple of years ago, and he had this little house. It was not much to speak of in Jackson, Mississippi, but then I became the owner of it. Mm-hmm. And a couple of years later, I sold it mm-hmm. and got a little bit of money from it. And I gave my mom some money. I gave my brother some money. And then I said, hey, I want to give 10 $500 grants to people who are working on something cool. Mm-hmm. And it can be for-profit or nonprofit that they're working on, but just something cool. So I just put a tweet up, got a lot of response. But
the question was, what would $500 do for you? And it's not expecting anything, just to create, to make goodness.
Exactly, yeah. I didn't want to dictate what they were doing or give too much of a parameter around it. It was more like because I had done something a little bit similar on a smaller scale for Christmas, mm-hmm. just kind of went online and like gave away a few things. And mm-hmm. I saw the results of that like a couple of months later. And I was like, this is too cool. Like you can do something for $50 that just has some impact. And I remembered being – you alluded to this before, but I remember being so broke just recently, just in the last 3 years, being so broke where $50 would have just – made my week to mm-hmm. get that out of nowhere. So that's what I did the Christmas thing about. And then the 500, I said, well, 50 will do something, 500 will really do something and really affect change and move things. And I'm about I like to see things happen pretty quickly. I don't like to sit around.
There's an instantaneous aspect to this.
Yeah,
it wasn't just like pay down someone's debt. You wanted them to take that and do something.
Yeah, that's what I was looking for. I mean, but people could kind of just pitch whatever. Mm-hmm. And they just told me. And so people just started sending things. And then Alyssa Milano retweeted it. And then because of that, Deborah Messing, who plays Grace on Will and Grace, who I've been watching for nearly 20 years, she retweeted it and liked it. And so I got like 1,500 responses.
For 10?
For 10.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
So when that happened,
pressure.
I did choose 10,
okay.
which were awesome. But then I said, hey, this is something. And it's not so big that it's insurmountable.
Right.
Insurmountable. So I decided to turn it into like an official nonprofit where we gift $500 grants just periodically throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really, I mean, it's
so
me.
It's not a GoFundMe. It's not a Patreon. It's something different.
Yeah.
It's like this $500 is a barrier between me and this great thing that I want to do.
Yeah. It started with Brian Landers and Diane Charez, mm-hmm. who are both friends of mine and on the backstage team. And we get to, grant people money to do cool things. So it's anything from like.
There was a cosplayer who wanted something. Like it was like.
So it's a black woman who. Like a young woman who wanted to go to this convention that she's never been able to go to. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And she showed pictures of her doing cosplay.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's not really my thing, to be honest. Like, it's not the world that I live in. I've had a lot of, friends that do that. But it's not something I personally would do. But I was like, that like gives her joy. There's pure joy on her face.
Well, her whole Twitter feed was she's just geeked about that.
Yeah.
And for people like you and I who are privileged to go to conferences and speak at conferences,
yeah.
I know people who go to a conference every 3 years.
Yeah,
or
and
never.
I couldn't get into a conference before 3 years ago. I just couldn't.
Exactly.
That was no way that could happen
right.
unless somebody handed me a way in. And I thought about like I kind of sent myself into the future and said, what would that be like if she were able to go? What could that mean for her? And what could that create in her and stir in her, and what could she then do with that? And that was just the.
That's just one example.
That's one example.
The trip of a lifetime for that.
For her. Yeah. And like, it's there. It's attainable.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So now we do that.
And what is the name of that? And where can we go?
It's
a nonprofit I can donate money to.
That's right. You can apply or you can donate money if you'd like. And we get donations from $5 to $5,000, honestly.
Seriously?
Yes. So anything is great, you know?
And it is?
It's called Cover, and it's projectcover.org.
Okay.
And it's also Project Cover on Twitter.
Projectcover.org. And then
that's
it's
right.
a nonprofit, and you might even be able to go and check with Benevie if you have a big company, and they might be able to do matching against that because
yeah.
it is an official nonprofit.
It is officially. We have a fiscal sponsor, and it's a tax-deductible donation.
Now, let me ask you this as we close the podcast. Is there can a person invest in Backstage Capital, and do they have to give you a certain amount of money? Like if there's a rich person listening to this podcast, are you at the stage where I'm not even going to take your money?
I cannot answer that because of SEC regulations.
Oh, really?
Do,
I did not know that.
Do,
well, I apologize for putting you and the government on the spot. Okay, so that's good to know. But people can learn more about
Backstage. You can learn about us all day.
So where can we learn about
BackstageCapital.com. You can see everything that we do. And if you ever want to get in touch with anyone who's a part of our crew, which is a large crew, you go to the crew page. The first name of that person at BackstageCapital.com is how you reach us.
Okay. So under your team, you can go and see the list of all the different people, what they specialize in, what they focus on.
That's right.
First name at
yes.
Backstage Capital.
There's also an applications URL, which is BackstageCapital.com/apply.
Apply.
If you are a founder or at a company and you'd like to seek funding for your for-profit company that you think is going to make us a lot of money.
And that we are allowed to encourage
we
people to.
We encourage all day.
So BackstageCapital.com/apply if you've got a great idea,
yeah.
the next killer startup, and you want Backstage Capital.
And I'd say, you know, if you're an investor listening, the way that we can connect is talk about co-investing. We can talk about that. So get in touch. We can talk about co-investing and about what we have, you know, planned for the future.
Fantastic. Well, I'm so glad that things are going so well for Backstage
Thank you.
Capital. You've got a team of thousands now.
Yes, there's thousands of us at Backstage Capital. Christy, how do you do it?
17,000.
How many people now?
I think are we at 17?
17.
Yeah, 17. And we just started, we did a joint venture with Tangelo, which you can read more about on our site, which is a venture studio with six core members. So we're adding to it.
And how many were you when I talked to you in that hotel?
Me.
Low these many years ago.
Me.
You.
Yeah, two years ago would have been me. I don't know if I'd met Brian yet.
Wow. Well, that's
I don't
so
know
fantastic.
If I met Christy yet.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was me.
Well, we wish you all the success in the coming 2 years, and hopefully I'll check in with you again.
Thank you so much.
This has been another episode of Hansel Meets, and I'll see you again next week.